Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. JetBlue flight attendant Stephen Slater pulled the ripcord on his career this week. Apparently, laid into a rude passenger, hit the beer cart, and made a personal evacuation onto the tarmac at JFK in New York. Now he's in trouble with the law and a hero online. His drama pulled together so many pieces of the American workplace picture these days. Stressed employees, rude customers, boiling point pressure. This hour on Point, Stephen Slater's JetBlue exit and workplace blues. In the USA, you can join the conversation. Were you shocked by or jealous of the Stephen Slater story? Are you longing to bail? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Chris Rouser, writer for New York Magazine, who's been covering the Slater story. Chris, thanks very much for being here.
No problem. Thanks, Tom.
It's getting a little more complicated, a little bit different than we first heard. What do we now know about what apparently happened on that plane?
Well, you know, you're right. There was a different version of events that we heard originally that actually has changed today. There's a couple stories in the Daily News and the Wall Street Journal that changed things. Basically, we had originally heard that Slater reacted angrily at the end of the flight when someone pulled some luggage down and hit him on the head, and that's what sparked the actual altercation. But now we learn that the passenger pulled down the overhead compartment and hit Slater on the head at the beginning of the flight. And then there's all these people talking to the newspapers today saying, you know, he acted strange throughout the rest of the flight. He was a real pill. He gave up the in-flight service halfway through. And then only after several people had actually disembarked from the plane did he have his eruption where he, you know, got on the loudspeaker, told people off, and then jumped out the emergency exit.
New York Post or Daily News, I forget which, describing him as disheveled throughout the flight, a big gash on his forehead, apparently from this overhead bin that was yanked down, but just sort of distracted, to say the least, kind of jumpy all through the flight.
Yeah, you know, it was the Daily News, and they had a whole piece where they talked to a bunch of different people, and the witnesses said that when he got up to do, you know, the standard, this is what happens if the oxygen mask
right.
comes down, his shirt was unbuttoned, and then later, you know, people asked him for help, and he said, I got to take care of myself, because, of course, he had this gash on his forehead.
And they said that when he was done with the mask and the seatbelt little thing, he just threw them on the floor, flung them away.
Yeah, multiple witnesses said he just sort of angrily finished up that whole segment.
Where does he stand now on the legal front, Chris? What's he up against?
Well, you know, he's facing charges of criminal mischief and trespassing, and that, you know, the maximum terms that I think I've read is 7 years for that. I mean, I can't imagine it would go that far, but, you know, he's been arraigned, and he's facing these charges.
Meanwhile, just on the air front, New York Post has flight attendants, you know, at airports in New York saying he's a hero in our eyes. He's our hero.
Well, you know, it's hard as someone, especially, you know, going through a recession, not to imagine that everybody has some sort of fantasy where they're, you know, fed up and they're not going to take it anymore. But certainly the airline services industry is one of the most tension-fraught services industry in America. I mean, anybody who's flown a plane knows that these people are dealing with really tense passengers and a lot of guff a lot of the time.
When he pulled the emergency exit chute, that's pretty dramatic when that thing pops out and goes, where was he? Were they nearly at the, you know, ramp to get off? Was he out in the middle of the airport runways or where was it, you know?
According to the reports today, they were docked, you know. People were walking out on the breezeway, so he... You know, he could have run away, but he instead decided to do this incredibly dramatic escape.
A little more drama than just running away. Grab a couple of beers and send the chute out there after unleashing what we're told was a sort of tirade of profanity at whoever the offending passenger was over the public address system. A lot of people shocked. I mean, up where I am, the Boston Globe saying, you know, flight attendant from hell, and he should be judged harshly for this on their editorial page. On the other hand, he's got this Facebook fan page set up now with 180,000 plus people giving him a big thumbs up.
Yeah, 181,000 fans, and there's 229 discussions on the Facebook page. There's you know, there's multiple sort of ballads of Steven Slater on YouTube. Jimmy Fallon did a whole song about him two nights ago. It's really caught on.
I don't know if this is just sad and cheesy or if it tells us something important about the pressure that American workers are under today, not least American workers in the airline industry, which has been really tightly pressed. Chris Rouser, please stand by in New York. Joining us now also from New York is Stanley Bing, business humorist, columnist, blogger. He writes the back page column for Fortune magazine, author most recently of Executrix, How to Retire While You're Still Working. Stanley Bing, a pseudonym for a writer who's also a corporate executive in a Fortune 500 company, a frequent flyer. Stanley Bing, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You've been up there in the air. Can you imagine what we saw happen this week with Steven Slater? Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, passengers are, you know, I mean, it's a large plane and most people are very nice, but there's always one or two who, as a passenger, you're embarrassed to be in the same, you know, tiny little space confined with that person. So there are a lot of obnoxious people. And I think before so much pressure was poured onto the whole flying situation, as Chris pointed out, you know, people could be obnoxious and still live in the environment. But now you have the whole extraordinary pressure cooker of this tiny silver tube in the sky, and it drives about, you know, a certain number of passengers kind of goofy, and I think among the flight attendants there are a couple of wing nuts too.
We're going to look beyond the little silver tubes in the sky, though they're interesting in themselves. I mean, what have you seen in flying, Stanley, when it comes to attendance and the pressure on them or you know, them sort of buckling? And what about customers, flyers?
Well, you know, I've seen attendance, for example. There was one woman who it sort of terrorized an entire row of people with, you know, just sort of bad vibes and was wearing an enormous button, a flight attendant, that said, "I don't care what your name is either."
Why?
Because probably she's, you know, had many people who seem not to care what her name is, and that was her hot button that got her resentful, and so she's flying around with a huge load of resentment, you know. And at the same time, you see passengers trying to do what that woman on JetBlue did, which is to stuff like something the size of a steamer trunk into this tiny little compartment with no consideration for other people. And the world is filled with people who have no consideration for other people. So it's like a tinderbox up there, and it doesn't surprise me that this guy flew off the handle. You know, it could happen again.
And this coming out in the same week as we got this video coming out of a woman who pulled up to a McDonald's drive-through window. They didn't have Chicken McNuggets. She jumps out of her car, practically climbs through the window, punching the attendant there. I mean, people are really getting off the handle in all quarters. I've got a web comment here that says that regardless about how everything's getting kind of too angry, regardless of who feels he's right or wrong, says our listener, there's a common thread that our society has become rude. My observation, employees who are stuck in the middle of edicts from above to increase productivity and cut costs appear to be cutting corners and behaving abruptly to customers, in this case, passengers who are already feeling dehumanized. But then she writes, what happened to our manners? I live this dilemma with alarming frequency as a medical surgical nurse with visitors. I mean, Stanley Bing, this seems like, in a way, a story that applies right across our economy, that the screws are in, people are feeling the pressure.
Well, it really does. I mean, you know, and it's kind of a diseased system because you have crazy passengers and you have flight attendants who, you know, someone wrote to me, I wrote a blog about this, and someone wrote to me and said, you know, in the old days, there were 24 flight attendants on an American Airlines 747, and now there are, you know, 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. So in other words, just like everywhere else in corporate America, people are being asked to do the job that used to be done by two people. But in the case of the flying, there's the inherent danger that people react to differently. Some people drink too much. Some people, you know, just act narcissistic. I mean, whatever the way that individuals behave when they're under a lot of pressure afflicts both passengers and flight attendants. But the flight attendants, you know, part of their job is to simulate friendliness. And I think to some extent that may be going by the wayside as the pressure mounts.
They've got to keep their cool. Gordon in Buffalo, New York. Gordon, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you see?
Hello, Tom. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Really enjoy your show. End up a whole bunch of driveway moments where I sit in the car trying to finish it.
Great. What have you seen in the air, Gordon?
Yes?
What have you seen in the air?
Excuse me. I just wanted to mention, first off, that I'm a remote productions person, and my job is going very well. Love who I work with. They're great people.
Good.
That takes me to about 4 segments a week. I do agree with Stanley. There are some really nice people out there on those high-speed, pressurized, shiny tubes that you mentioned. However, the asking people to do more and getting smaller and smaller seats seems like the cattle call. You know, it's going to sound like I feel like mooing every time I go down one of those jetways. It's putting a lot of people in there.
You know,
no question. Thanks, Gordon. Stanley?
Tom, you know, there's one other thing about JetBlue. I've had a number of bizarre experiences on it. I mean, one time a few years ago, they come down with these snacks, you know, and I said, you know, I'll have a pretzels and a Cheetos or something like that. And the woman said to me, well, why don't you just take the whole basket?
Oh, you greedy, guy. Raisins
exactly.
And Cheetos?
I felt bad. I mean, it's like an authority figure telling you that you're a greedy loser,
oh,
you know.
My gosh.
But there's one thing to say about what's the problem for JetBlue flight attendants. They have no place to kick back and get out of the and to hide. They have no restroom in that plane, place to rest, I mean.
Maybe that's where they get the extra leg room, but oh my goodness. Stanley Bing, please stand by in New York, and Chris Rouser with the New York Magazine, Jimmy Fallon, and others are already singing and writing about Stephen Slater. Here's his Ballad of Stephen Slater from Jimmy Fallon this week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
When someone tells you what happened on Jersey Shore, you gotta get to
we're talking this hour about the JetBlue flight attendant who bailed and job frustration in America. Stephen Colbert was having a little fun last night with the Stephen Slater story.
Thanks to Slater, we'll need to make some changes to the airline safety card. Like, in the event of flight attendant freakout, assume crash position and extend arm to capture meltdown on iPhone. I mean, seriously, no video of this?
They're crying over the no video. Stephen Slater posted bail and out of jail with a comment of his own here.
It seems like something here has resonated with a few people, and that's kind of neat.
We're looking at American workplace pressures. What happened in the sky? What may be happening in your workplace? Is this guy way out of line? Should he get those 7 years in prison, or is he a working man's hero to you? Stanley Bing joins us, business humorist, columnist, blogger for columnist for Fortune magazine, author of Executrix, How to Retire While You're Still Working. Chris Rouser joins us, writer for New York Magazine, knows this story well. And right now, Micklin's calling from Boston. Micklin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Pretty well. What's your story?
I'm a Delta flight attendant, and I can relate to Stephen Slater's frustration. This summer's travelers have been a lot worse than normal. However, to respond that way, I feel, is very inappropriate to all the people who do fly with us on a regular basis and treat us well. That's not how they should be treated in any way, speaking. Also, to make him a hero, he's not a hero of the American people or the working class or anything like that. Our heroes are our police officers, our firefighters, our soldiers, the people who are defending us.
You know, I absolutely agree about who genuine heroes are here. And yet, at the Facebook page, he's got 180, I don't know what thousand now, people saying, you go, Stephen. You know, what do you think that's about, Micklin? How do you interpret people saying, yes, yes, Slater? That's what I wish I could do. Here's one, for example. Bobby says, if not already retired, he would inspire me to do something similar instead of tolerating employer abuse for 40 years.
I understand, and I completely get that. I would love to voice my opinions and my irritations towards individuals. However, as a customer service person, I'm in the industry by choice. I prefer making people happy rather than unhappy, and I try to do my best to make their situations and their experiences best and comfortable as possible.
Why do you think they're becoming more rude in your experience, Micklin? You say the summer's been bad. Is it because, you know, I mean, there's no food, people get the cattle car kind of treatment very often?
Well, the food has always been horrible, so I really don't know why people are upset about the food. At least this opportunity, they can bring food they actually like and want to eat. I personally don't eat airplane food at all, but that's besides the point.
Spoken like a true flight attendant. Yeah,
it's really, really bad for you. Anyways, my thoughts is that people feel more entitled. The airline ticket prices have gone up. They feel like they're entitled to more. They're getting less than before 9/11. They're financially strained in other aspects. Getting through security is just ridiculous. TSA and every airport, I can attest to this, is different on what you have to take out,
take off your shoes,
all of that. So it's all of that combined, I think, is really stressing the population in general and really pushing everybody to their limits. And we're sticking a tube at 35,000 feet. We really have nowhere else to go.
Micklin, keep your cool up there. Don't hit that emergency chute, at least when you're that high off the ground. And thank you for calling. There's a flight attendant's view. Let's get one more from Saranac Lake, New York. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, I couldn't help but see the analogy with the way our country is going into the stressors in corporate America. I'm a manager, and I most of the time feel like I have no advocate above me, and yet I have a workforce below me, and I'm being pressured to perform at a higher level, even to do stupid on purpose on occasion. So these flight attendants, once they're stuck on the plane, are like a front-level manager in corporate America. They have no advocates, nobody to help them, and yet they have to react to whatever is they're dealt with. And you know, I don't blame the guy for bailing, and if I could bail from what I'm in right now and afford it, I would myself.
Feeling the pressure from underneath and from on top and right there in the middle as kind of managers in the sky. Bill, I appreciate your call. Let's go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Phyllis Moen joins us. She's a professor of sociology at the University of Minnesota, specializes in workplace issues. Phyllis Moen, thanks very much for being here. What do you make of the Slater story?
Hi, Tom. Well, I see it less as a private trouble of this one person than a public issue of the workplace stress that is becoming an epidemic in the United States.
Why now?
Well, we're on this moving platform of change, and that also creates this uncertainty and ambiguity. But everything is changing, the economy, globalization, technologies. And good jobs are rapidly turning into bad jobs, as we've heard described, as well as disappearing entirely. And so people are not feeling in control of their lives and not in control of their work.
But is it really different in degree? I mean, you know, it was way back in, 1977, David Allen Coe wrote that. It was a hit back then. Take this job and shove it. This is not exactly a born yesterday phenomena of people being, you know, unhappy or feeling pressured at work.
Well, there have always been bad jobs, but what has changed is that the good jobs are now bad. There used to be two labor forces at least, one with very insecure jobs, with as Bill said, no advocate, and other jobs where there was a clear career ladder to both job security and economic security, as well as benefits and a better climate. Those jobs have disappeared. And so I think this take this job and shove it was true for a portion of the workforce in the 1970s. It's true for just about everyone now.
Stanley Bing, you heard our caller in Saranac Lake, sort of along that same line. Mm-hmm. You're at a Fortune 500 company. Mm-hmm. How about, I mean, are we all in the pressure cooker now? Is it a justified kind of flip out?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a bit overstated. I think a lot of people like their jobs still. I think people are happy to be employed. Certainly, people are asked to do more, and there's a lot of obnoxious stuff out there. But what happens when there's a lot of pressure is that certain individuals can't take it. And that, you know, that kind of, you know, involves both passengers and flight attendants. And within any workplace, there are people who can't take it. But, you know, there are a lot of people who are happy at their jobs. I don't think every job stinks right now. I mean, I think part of this situation is that you have the media, you have the new media, you have the internet. Mm-hmm. And the internet is basically the home page for rage. So anybody who's angry, anybody who flips somebody off is immediately, you know, lauded. This, you have Facebook, everybody, way to go guy. I mean, this flight attendant, as much as he may have had every reason to do so, was extremely rude to a whole plane full of people and kind of made people nervous, if you read the papers today.
Oh, yeah.
And most of them don't. I mean, most of them are like Micklin, who is just a wonderful person and who stands up to all of this kind of obnoxious stuff every day and sees herself as, you know, that's part of her job. So I think that at the fringes of every system, there are people who just can't take the strain, and it's worse up in the sky. But I think the rage factor is old media versus new media. I mean, you have the Boston Globe attacking the guy, and you have the Internet lauding him, and there you have a microcosm of where we're at, I think.
Phyllis Mohn, strain at the fringes, Stanley Bing says.
Yeah, I really disagree. I know people who love their jobs. I love my job. But what's different is what in our research people say, I love my job, I just wish there was about half of it. There's this greater work intensification, greater pressure to perform, a sense of having to be there so that you will look committed and therefore not lose your job. Mm-hmm. So I think the increase in insecurity, something else has happened too that's really moved us from the 1960s and 70s is that the workforce has changed and half the workforce is now women. That means that neither men nor women have anybody home on the home front to take care of everything else, including a sick mother, an ailing child. And so somebody said that they can't kick back on the plane, but often they can't kick back at home either. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of home as a refuge and rest and restoration isn't really happening for lots of people.
No place to hunker down or the plane or at home. I mean, Chris Rouser, it's true. We heard the backstory we heard here is that Stephen Slater dealt with a dying father and more recently with a sick mother. That must be a lot to juggle if you're also in the air all those hours.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to view this story in a vacuum, but it just doesn't exist that way. Mm-hmm. He comes from his mother was a flight attendant, his father was a pilot, his father died of Lou Gehrig's disease, his mom is currently suffering from lung cancer, and he was actually supposed to this weekend fly out to sort of wrap, you know, take care of her personal effects this weekend. You know, this is a guy who had a lot in his head that we, you know, the passengers weren't seeing.
I mean, on the upside, he had recently been nominated for the JetBlue Values Committee. I don't know what that is exactly, but it sounds like he was described as having a lot of what the JetBlue folks call blue juice. I guess enthusiasm for the job. What happened to that, Chris?
I mean, you know, I guess you can be enthusiastic and still get angry. He was the chair of the Uniform Redesign Committee. He'd worked at several other airlines, and he took a 5-year break before he started working at JetBlue. But all of his coworkers said that he was actually a very enthusiastic worker. And a lot of, you know, some of the newspapers talked to people who had been on other flights with him who remembered him and said that he was very friendly and very upbeat.
Let's hear from our listeners, Gene in Mobile, Alabama. Gene, you're on the air.
Hi, I think all these theories are great and relevant, but I'm wondering if he was just ready. As far as I understand, he had been in service as a flight attendant for 28 years.
28, he said, but it seems it was really 20. I think, Chris, 20, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was closer to 20. He started when he was 19 years old.
Still 20 years old.
Well, I think that's a beautiful thing in itself. Look at how many people aren't employed for that long. I think he was just ready to go. And I think it's good that he, you know, perhaps left in a way nobody was hurt. It's a romantic way to leave a job. So as far as being a hero, you know, there's lots of different types of heroes that we have in life. He was sort of this mythical hero, but I think he was just ready. And I think it comes down to people, you know, trying to also not put up with bad manners. I think it's okay. How many times do we all see people acting disrespectfully and don't say anything?
A lot lately, a lot. So two beers and down the chute, and you say maybe it was just time for him to go. Let's hold that. Let me get another from Washington, D.C. Ivan, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Ivan.
Hello. I have basic, just simple comment to make and, you know, I guess a question to ask. I think essentially this person, he goes off and, you know, does this really dangerous thing, you know, opening up the chute. And I know actually a person that was on this flight. This is kind of a scary moment. No matter what personal issues he had going on in his life, that was just flat out wrong. And he made the rude passenger, whoever he was, actually be right by acting that way. There's no excuse for it. Yeah, he should get whatever penalty, you know, the law imposes on him.
So hit him hard. So one says time to go, the other flat out wrong. Let me get one more. Alicia, Norfolk, Virginia. Alicia, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm one of the Facebookers that hit the like button on this guy.
Okay, the 183,000 and counting. Okay, why?
Yeah, I'm one of them. Is he a hero? No, he's not a hero. Did he act out of line? Yeah, he probably did. But this is just another example of how, you know, people act so rude wherever you are. You see it at the gas station, you see it at the coffee shop, you see it at restaurants, you see it everywhere. I'm a teacher. In the classroom, I deal with this every single day in every single class. There's always one or two students acting way out of line, acting rude. Now, would I go off on them? No, because I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And should this guy have gone off on them? No, because he's in the customer service business. But he probably hit a breaking point. You know, I think it's the culmination of the day and maybe his many years of service. But who wants to put up with that? I mean, I don't. I certainly don't as a teacher. But then, you know, when you try to talk to a parent or your boss, they ask you, well, turn the other cheek. You know, don't say anything. Don't do anything. Don't give this kid any repercussions for their actions or their behavior. So are we just propelling this type of behavior, and is it just going to get worse, is my question.
Kind of tolerating it. Rudeness maybe too much, too long. Stanley Bing, what about this issue, you know, a sort of rudeness breaking point here? I mean, certainly customers, maybe people generally, have become a lot quicker to just go off on service people or anybody.
Yeah, people are really jerks, and there are more jerks around. I mean, you know, there's a phenomenon here also where they don't, you know, if you check your luggage, the chance of it being lost or late, and now they're charging you for luggage. So you have people coming on planes with this crazy amount of luggage, and I'm sure the flight attendants are just appalled at what they see. But there's a reward for rage in our culture right now. I mean, rudeness is not punished, and I think, you know, I mean, there's some policing of passengers by other passengers. I've been on planes, actually, where a rude passenger is booed by an entire cabin full of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in that may lie an answer. I mean, at some point, people just have to get sick of rudeness on both sides and at the job as well. I mean, we dress like slobs. I mean, one person said to me today, you used to dress up to go on an airplane. Now you have people in pajamas on airplanes.
Well, I mean, it's about all your tuxedo is certainly going to get wrinkled, at least in the class I fly
really,
in.
Really, that's very true. And your pajamas don't look that good on you, believe
right.
me.
Phyllis Mullen, what about the it's just time to go? He worked there 20 years, and so, you know, hit the out button. It was time to go.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that Gene made. We have to think about our workforce. It's an older workforce. So people who've been there for 20 years, even though he started awfully young, they really came to work at a time when you could believe in a career ladder, a career mystique, that hard work would get you somewhere. And he has lived through, as have others of his cohort, lived through the changes that we've seen that have made this less and less true for more and more workers. So he started with one kind of social contract with his employer, and it really devolved over time. So he feels, I'm sure, like many workers do, and especially older workers, that they don't want to take it anymore. So I think Gene was right about 20 years might be enough.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the JetBlue flight attendant who bailed and job frustration in America. Phyllis Mullen joins us. She's at the University of Minnesota, professor of sociology there, specializes in workplace issues, author of The Career Mystique, Cracks in the American Dream. Stanley Bing is with us, columnist and a frequent flyer with Fortune Magazine, author of Executrix, and Chris Rouser of New York Magazine. Chris, I know we have you just for another second here. What's your guess, Chris? So you watch popular trends at New York Magazine. Is this guy going to go down as a, you know, Facebook hero, working man's hero, or, you know, the bum who hit the chute and grabbed the beer?
Well, the great thing about the internet is that your fame can spread with incredible rapidity. I mean, he became so famous so fast. But the other thing about the internet is that it forgets very quickly. And, you know, he still has yet to go on Good Morning America or the Today Show. But the thirst for exciting, crazy stories on the internet is very short-lived. I think people will remember him, but I'd be surprised if even a week and a half from now people were still talking about it.
Chris Rouser with New York Magazine. We shall see. Thanks very much for being with us, Chris.
No problem. Thank you.
Stanley Phyllis, lots of comments here from the web. Here's Amanda says, I've worked as a waitress for 13 years. I completely understand the impulse to tell off a rude or unruly customer. Oftentimes people treat those in the service industry with a degree of dismissive contempt. She says her personal philosophy, however, is that you just have to brush it off and keep going, but not everybody feels that way. Here's one from Slater's Facebook page. Francisco says, way to go, seriously. Workers are people, too, and don't deserve the disrespect of the consumer. More people should have the guts to put their foot down, fire back verbally, snatch a couple of beers, and make one hell of an exit. Bravo. Sarah in Louisa, Virginia. What do you think, Sarah?
Well, I have two comments. One is that, has anybody looked into whether he might have had a concussion that might have set off this thing that it had been in his mind to do for a long, long time, that he just really was not feeling good and just went ahead with it?
It's a good question. We don't know, but he had a gash on his forehead and he was acting pretty distressed through the flight that much. Maybe we'll find out in the course of the trial, Sarah. What do you think overall?
Well, I think in this country, we've kind of gotten to where we don't want to work anymore. I'm an accountant, my husband's an engineer, and it is nothing for us to work 10 or 12-hour days to accomplish what we see as our career path. We have children that are in their 30s, and they also view it that way. And some of them are taking stuff from management and, you know, don't see a way out, but they still go in and they do a good job. As far as the service industry goes, I've experienced that there is no manners anymore, that, you know, as a paying customer, many, many times I'm treated like they're doing a favor for me instead of the other way around.
Yeah,
now, I don't know about Stephen, whether that's how he felt or how he acted. Apparently not, because other people who have flown with him say no. But it's almost like we have stopped teaching manners to people and stopped expecting manners of people.
Sarah, let us pick it up. I appreciate your call. Stanley, first to you. I mean, on this front of, you know, service people themselves not delivering service that's being paid for.
Well, what we're hearing now is we're hearing a lot of rage, employee rage, which is, you know, quite justified a lot of the time. But
why? Why?
Because customers are idiots a lot of the time. I mean, not all of them, but certainly a percentage of them are rude and expect too much and they don't tip well or they don't treat you nicely. Mm-hmm. So there's every reason for employees to feel upset. Most of them, though, do have a pretty good attitude. But occasionally you get a person who's just had enough. I mean, you know, there's a lot of customer rage out there. And I wonder whether there would be a Facebook page about somebody who lashed out at a waitress or flight attendant if they did it with flair the way that Stephen did. I mean, there's something about the flamboyance of this thing that people really like. But the point is that there's bad relations on both sides. People who have been served in restaurants or have had bad flight attendants or, you know, across the entire service business know that there are really hinky people out there that shouldn't be serving customers. We're not hearing that now. What we're hearing now is a lot of rage, displaced rage at authority sort of projected onto this disturbed person. I think that the person who called in and said he may have, you know, when you hit your head, that's no small deal. And
right.
He had a gash on his head. Also, you know, grabbing two beers. People love the grabbing two beers. On his Facebook page, he talks about being in recovery. So the fact that he took beers is also very interesting. I mean, this guy was decomposing.
The heck with it.
And
yeah.
He did all this bizarre stuff. But America loves it. You know, the internet, whatever people are mad about at any time, it's like, wahoo. And, you know, it's fun. And, you know, Steve Colbert does a song and everybody's, you know, but the fact is that anybody who's been served poorly, we could have a song about that one day too. Just the question is, you know, what happens when the employee really goes bonkers? Then it's not quite so funny as going down a chute and you know, taking a beer with you.
So there's the allure or the attraction of the extravagant gesture. But Phyllis Bowen, I hear you really holding the flag for the notion that this just isn't just about the extravagant gesture, that there's a different pressure cooker now. You hear our caller, Sarah, is essentially saying, hey, come on, you know, I'm an accountant, my husband's an engineer, we work long hours, tough it out. It's the American way, Phyllis.
Right. Well, and it used to be the American way, this career mystique idea that hard work would bring you success, happiness, and fulfillment. Is out the window for most workers today. And for some, it is there. For some, they are disappointed at age 50 or 55 or 60 to discover that they're suddenly let go, right, when perhaps they're trying to put their kids through college. So, yes, I think, you know, there's two ways you can look at the situation. One is we need to change the person or people. The other is we need to change work. And as a sociologist, I'm on more of the side, let's change the way work is done and accomplished, and the right people will find the right jobs.
Well, how do we change work? Presumably, you know, make it better, make it not so taxing or abusive sometimes in the midst of such a terrible economy. Is that possible?
I think it is, because I believe if you give, and the research shows that if you give people greater control over their work experience and fewer demands, or at least manageable demands, that it affects not only their health and well-being, but also their productivity. So when employers wake up to this, the idea that having a satisfied workforce is good for the bottom line as well, that we could think about work redesign.
But that seems like, forgive me, but it seems kind of like a 1990s comment. Here we are, you know, with a terrible economy. You know, companies have gone under. You know, they're sort of not keeping employees on at all. There's more productivity. Workers are being asked to do more. Companies are saying they've got to survive.
Right, but a lot of the people that we've interviewed talk about something like presenteeism, that they're there, but they're not really working, that they have disengaged from their work. So that isn't going to promote the bottom line. Others are so anxious about losing their job that it makes it very difficult for them to be productive. So the way work is organized, sometimes at a crisis, at a time of crisis, as in the Great Depression, mm-hmm. it's a time to rethink how we work. And from that came the wage and hour laws that we still operate mm-hmm. on now. Let's just take the example of a airline.
Okay.
A person working, we could, you know, maybe get rid of some of their job that's low value work, like for instance, selling snacks or doing other things. I mean, we could try and reorganize the job, try and give them support from above, such that they could refer this. Recalcitrant
passenger to somebody else. Mm-hmm.
To someone else, and someone else would have the authority to throw that passenger off. That would really do a lot for changing civility on airplanes.
The threat of being flown off, certainly. But Stanley, what do you make of this? I mean, in a way, the airplane seems like a microcosm of the pressures we're up against now. The industry had a really hard time, narrow profit margins for a long time, cutbacks all over the place. I mean, when you fly these days, you feel yourself at the losing end of an economic squeeze. And you feel...
Yeah, you're always amazed when things go well.
Yeah, it's, absolutely. You know, I mean, it seems like you're being squeezed. Yeah, maybe you've got a decent fare, but boy, oh boy, this is a lousy economic, you know, experience these days, and no doubt the flight attendants feel the same pressures.
It is, and Phyllis is right about one thing in particular, which is that workers have fewer and fewer rights sort of granted to them going forward, and, it, you know, you can observe that JetBlue flight attendants have no labor union. Some of the flight attendants do have a labor union, which they complain about vociferously, if you allow them to. But these guys are unrepresented, and I think they're pretty much at the beck and call of management and whatever things that management wants to have them do. You know, they don't sell snacks. They come down the aisle twice during a flight and give you some Cheetos. So, you know, I think the thing is this pervasive rudeness that makes certain people behave very badly. I continue to believe that most people make the system work in spite of all of the, you know, the difficulties that are thrown in their face. But, you know, people who have difficulties, people who are under tremendous pressure, there's going to be representatives of those people. And then, you know, then the popular culture embraces them. There was this guy a few years ago, I don't remember his name, who bailed out of a plane with a ton of money and has never been seen since.
Long ago, yeah.
What was his name? I forget.
I don't know. Up in the Northwest, he bailed
up in the
out.
Northwest.
But he wasn't the flight attendant. He wasn't the steward.
No, but what about this guy who's the barefoot bandit, who is really a thief that goes from place to place stealing things.
Yeah.
He's a folk hero, too. I mean, there's something about our culture that mythologizes people because it needs to express its rage in certain ways.
It may be as simple as that. Here's some from Stephen Slater's Facebook page. Here's Carol. She says to Stephen, "Thank you for your strength and fortitude. We are living vicariously through you. Finally, some vindication." Mary says, "Do it for all of us who don't have the guts and joy." And Peggy says, "You raised a great guy, Mom," speaking to the mom that he's been taking care of. So I don't know if that's straight up mythologizing or some kind of feeling of solidarity around the workplace. Steve in Boxborough, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to, hello. I've thrown a lot in the last 25 years, and I'd just like to say that I miss the cheery smile of the flight attendants you always used to see. But however, beneath all that, you know, I've never had a lost bag. I've never had somebody treat me rudely. Never had a problem with the flight attendant. You know, they're a little bit gruff, let's just say. So you spend 30 seconds and all of a sudden they're just another human being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that they're being portrayed negatively and it's mm-hmm. not right. They're people, and giving them a chance and they will respond the way you respond.
Yeah, give them a chance. Absolutely, give everybody a chance. We don't want everybody bailing off the plane. But a lot of people may feel like it, even those on the ground. Here's a comment at our website from Ashley. She says, "I fully understand the frustration of constant customer abuse. The Whole Foods market where I work attracts a circus of extremely difficult people. On a daily basis, I endure disrespect, ridiculous expectations, insults to my IQ. I feel the pain and would love to tell off every customer." She says, "Though I need to keep my job, so no matter how much I dream of it, I can't lash out." Phyllis, there's your trapped employee just
right.
Taking it as it comes.
And I think this absence of control, I mean, most people are told to deal with the stress, especially of these human relations kinds of jobs and rude customers, to be calm, to shrug it off, but to manage their tensions, you know, maybe take yoga. But what Stephen did is actually do something. And I think that's why he's getting all these positive accolades, is that he changed his situation where most people feel they can't. They don't have the ability to change their situation.
Yeah, who knows what it's going to be. Now, Robert in Manchester, Connecticut, you're on the air, Robert.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just want to say, I mean, I agree with the flamboyance. I think it was fantastic. I know it's one of those things everyone's like, oh, God, I would have loved to do that. But there's got to be accountability, because just because everybody would love to do it, it doesn't make it right. And the other thing I'd like to point out is that somebody made a comment about how people in the service industry, they get angry because, oh, well, maybe someone doesn't tip. That's probably one thing I can't agree with, because a tip is a gratuity. You don't have to do it. It's not mandatory. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't get tips because they might think they're doing a good job, but they don't. And I just think it's the service industry as a whole. I think people don't really cater to the customers like they should, and not like they used to. And I don't know. I think the airlines have to have some responsibility if tensions run that high. You know, you got people out on a tarmac for 3 hours, and they suffer prosecution if they get up and say something and, like, well, sit down. But it's okay to keep people in a plane for 3 hours. I just think the airlines need to have some responsibilities as well. I mean, this gentleman getting hit, inexcusable. That woman that hit him with the door should be facing something as well.
Well, who knows? Her name has not become public. Who knows what happens? But Phyllis, what about this idea, you know, pull your socks up, service people. You know, do a better job. Maybe you'll get the tip.
That's, I think, what people have been told, and that's how they have, for the most part, behaved. But they find that, for instance, the person who does work harder and smarter and more efficiently, that he's just, or she is just as insecure as someone who hasn't done these things. So there's this sense that the contract is broken, that if I do this, I get something in return. And that is true with tips. You do get something in return. But in most jobs, they don't see the rewards as commensurate with the new effort that is expected of people. And you can do it for a while. You can work, you know, 15-hour days or work through a deadline or an extra shift for a while, but you can't sustain it. And I think work as we know it is moving towards unsustainability in terms of the expectations versus the resources that workers have.
Out there, just maybe on the outer limit of expectation, and Stephen Slater hit the button, took the emergency chute, and that's all behind him now. We'll see what career may come next. Really interesting. Really great having you both with us. Stanley Bing, it's always great to have you on the show, and I appreciate your coming in today to be with us. A columnist for Fortune magazine. Thanks so much, Stanley.
Thank you.
And Phyllis Moen at the University of Minnesota, professor of sociology there, author of The Career Mystique, Cracks in the American Dream. Phyllis, thanks for joining us from Minneapolis. Great to have you with us today as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your thoughts and comments on the air and off. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us today. Here's David Allen Coe, 1977, Take This Job, and you know what? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for being here.
I can't wait to see their faces when I get the nerve to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't a